what we've found is that with AI, we're basically augmenting the reviewer. We're augmenting how they do things, the data they look at, the speed at which they're able to work. And so the reviewers are able to conduct a review 88 to 92% faster.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how pharma can use AI for generating strategic literature reviews accurately. Now, medical affairs teams have to keep up with medical literature that's increasing in volume and complexity, but now AI can actually more thoroughly review these and reduce costs by around 88%. Today, I'm with Richard Graves, the founder of Sorcero, who have used AI to create an automated, relevant, and rapid strategic literature review. Thanks for coming on the second podcast you've been on with me, Richard. Can you maybe start with telling everyone a little bit about your background and how you got into this space and what led you to found Sorcero?
Absolutely, Andre. And thanks for having me on. It was a real pleasure. With our last podcast, I'm very excited to be speaking with you today. So I'm the chief commercial officer and co-founder of Sorcero. And I haven't always worked in life sciences and pharma, but I have worked in data science and AI. I spent the majority of the early part of my career actually working in another field of science, mostly in climate science and energy, where at the same time, critical decisions were being made based on science that had tremendous impact on people's lives, on the economy. And that was really where I spent a lot of my time. And I learned a lot in those other industries. It's still a heavily regulated industry.
It's
not quite the same as the FDA, but you know, in every piece of collateral that goes out, it has to be reviewed by a public utility commission or commissioners. It is very similar in that way. The compliance around your statements, around the science, around energy is critical.
Difference,
I think, in many ways was something that I experienced and what got me into this field. My father was diagnosed with an ultra rare cancer, one that less than 500 people are diagnosed with in any particular year. And it was it wasn't diagnosed for 11 months. And a big part of that reason was because in the healthcare and life sciences world, a lot of the most critical evidence and data to help doctors diagnose and treat disease is still locked up in literature. And it's locked up in literature in a way that is difficult to review, difficult to analyze, and difficult to access. We took my doctor, my dad to doctors who were at University of Maryland and Johns Hopkins. And in fact, at Johns Hopkins, they've been running a decadal study on my father's coworkers because of their exposure, workplace exposure, that led to an elevated risk and cluster of these high-risk cancers. But the dots were never connected in time. And this kind of gets to one of the big motivating reasons behind Sorcero, and some of where we're applying the learnings we got from other industries, which is the idea that in healthcare and in life sciences, when you're looking for critical evidence for patients, wasted time is wasted lives.
And
that's kind of what informed what we're doing with intelligent systematic literature review, and we'll be talking about today.
And so when you started Sorcero, what was the application that you started with?
So we actually started with an application that's very similar, but a little different, called Intelligent Publication Monitoring. And we have some variants of it that are used that are sometimes called Intelligent Literature Monitoring. But we found that in all of the literature that people are reviewing, let alone doctors, life sciences companies couldn't keep up, even with all their resources, all their staffing, all their teams. We were very excited. Earlier this year, we won the Communicate Award with our customers and partners at AstraZeneca and Inizio for intelligent publication monitoring for medical affairs transformation.
Nice.
We started actually working with AstraZeneca's U.S. oncology team. And they found that their team, which is, you know, one of the most important oncology franchises in the world, treating many different types of cancer with an entire portfolio of transformative medicines, often used in combination therapy with other companies, that they couldn't keep track of everything. Our intelligent publication monitoring platform reads over 4,000 articles a week for them. And their analysis was that when they did it manually, a scientist, truly a scientist, you know, these are PhDs, MDs, MD PhDs, would have to spend 25 minutes reading each individual paper to know if it would be relevant for their product portfolio.
Wow, it's such a lot of time.
So much. And so each week, if you think about it, would be those 4,000 articles alone, just on oncology, on their products. And which, by the way, is a smaller subset of the over 180,000 oncology articles published in a year, would take over 100,000 minutes. Each week. When you calculate it, it's basically someone's full-time job for a year to read what comes out in a single week.
Wow. So how are they coping before they start using AI?
It's a very good question. And I think this is something where life sciences companies at some level have somewhat resigned themselves to they'll do their best, but they can't do it all. So they usually did a combination of two things. One, you'd look at only the very top journals. So you'd read what's coming out in Nature, you read what's coming out of maybe Frontiers of Oncology, but you wouldn't necessarily read the thousands of other journals that could still have critical and often sometimes the most innovative work. Second, they would have very, very complicated searches. Some of our customers have given us Word docs with 10 pages of concatenated Boolean expressions. That's trying to replicate these searches to get it very refined. And, you know, it's also complicated because of language. If I'm looking at research in the US, we call it tumor with a U. If we do in Europe, it's with an OU. Same with leukemia, The way we describe things, a simple missing of a single different variant of a term means that you could miss hundreds of articles. So it was a real challenge. And so they were kind of doing the best that they could with complex searches, manual reviews. But they knew, and everybody knew, you weren't getting all the evidence. You weren't getting all of it. And people just had to deal with it. And that's still where most companies are today, but things are changing now with AI.
And so when did you introduce the strategic literature review aspect of your suite?
So we had this in limited release for this year, but we're actually officially launching it in general availability actually this week.
So so it's really
you're getting it hot off the press. But we're actually officially releasing it. Been used by customers, it's been used by our partners, but it hasn't just been generally available on the Sorcera platform and on places like the Google Marketplace until now when we're releasing it.
And so I assume it builds on some of the things you were already doing with the medical literature monitoring and sort of work that you were doing there.
That's exactly right. We published a poster about 2 years ago with some of our customers, Moderna and an oncology company that's very innovative called Coherus. And we did all of the literature monitoring. And we discussed this, I think, on the last podcast for all of the COVID-19 literature. And folks like Pfizer and Moderna had to throw out the rule book. AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson as well. All of them have vaccines. They had to deal with over 700,000 publications on COVID. They had to do things differently. And so this led to an opening to the use of AI. And so with IPM, though, we provided kind of a version of continuous literature monitoring. Think of it as like a SLR light, but done continuously at scale.
Yeah.
And that was super powerful for landscape review, analytics, competitive analysis, and finding the signals for evidence extraction and even insights. We did a very interesting work on extracting complex insights from literature.
Yeah.
But what it didn't do was produce what SLRs are designed for, which is how do you get clinically validated evidence that's at the top of the evidence pyramid?
Yeah.
That's good enough to send to the FDA, good enough to send to a payer, good enough to send to a medical guideline review committee. And that's really what we're coming out with now. And so we partnered up with some of the leaders in evidence-based medicine.
Mm-hmm.
One of the advisors to the technology on this leads the Johns Hopkins Center on Evidence-Based Medicine. And we took that approach, which is how do we take that same incredible deliveries and speed that AI can bring and bring that to the systematic literature review, where you can generate based on the most cutting edge methodologies in fully validated manner. So you can create a Prisma, you could do dual independent review, you could do all of the things you want, you know, starting with abstract, full text, bias review, data extraction, all that. So you can really meet the very demanding standards of a regulatory agency or a payer.
So how complete is it after, how far does the AI go and how much does a human have to complete the process?
So that's a great question. So from the very beginning, our philosophy at Sorcero is, and we're finding it, by the way, being both proved out and being adopted by many leading AI companies, mm-hmm. including our partners at Google, is that humans plus AI are delivering better results than humans or AI alone.
Mm-hmm.
So what we found is that with AI, we're basically augmenting the reviewer. We're augmenting how they do things, the data they look at, the speed at which they're able to work. And so the reviewers are able to conduct a review 88 to 92% faster from those benchmarks. And the way it does it is in a couple ways. Some of it is automating away some of the rote work that no one enjoys doing but needs to happen. And some of it is about really cutting edge AI. And it's basically suggesting and optimizing your review process.
Okay.
So the first thing is with an SLR, you want to go as broad as possible. So many people will be looking, they're typically any proper SLR, you're looking at multiple databases. And one of the big challenges is those databases don't align. So if I'm looking at PubMed, I'm looking at Scopus, I'm looking at Embase, if I go to all three of them, I get a fairly comprehensive review. Although, believe it or not, there's still thousands, if not in some cases, if you're limiting it, even 10,000 plus journals that you might be missing by going through those. Yes.
Wow.
We just started doing some benchmarking, and there's a surprisingly large amount of data, particularly global data.
Yeah.
And that's really important if you're a manufacturer and you're launching in multiple countries.
Yeah, of course.
Someone might be like, oh, I don't want to see any journals except for like one or two in Brazil. But if you have a major presence in Brazil, you should review all that content.
Yeah, of course.
And if that's an important country for you, you should be able to respond to their physicians, their researchers on their journals.
That leads to another question. Does your platform read all these different languages?
So that's a great question. So we are adding in, we do have the ability to run basically reviews and searches. We found that a lot of multilingual articles have English abstracts, even if the full text isn't. We're adding in the Spring, the ability to handle over 29 different languages.
Wow. Which languages are you starting with? So, I mean, 29 is a lot to list, but are you doing Japanese?
Yes. So that is
one of the a really important one. Yeah.
In fact, recently we were in Tokyo and we met with METI, which is the Japanese government agency that's focused on trade and innovation and industry. Mm-hmm. And one of their big challenges they're facing is post-pandemic, They're struggling to get some of the licensing and foreign direct investment into their domestic life sciences sector because there's incredible innovation out of Japan. It's truly, you know, one of the most innovative life sciences markets in the world, but much of their literature is not translated or indexed or accessible. And so for teams that used to really physically go to Japan to really meet with all the teams, as they started to, you know, whether you're in Basel or New Jersey or London, people went to more virtual reviews. And so some of these systematic literature reviews are not just for evidence, they're also for looking for products to license. They're looking for products that are innovative and could be part of a combination therapy. There's a lot of uses for these. And so that's actually one of the areas where they want to figure out how to translate at scale their emerging clinical trials, literature, all the stuff that is coming out of Japan. And that's something that I think could produce a lot of value.
Yeah, because all of the clinical trials are redone in Japan, aren't they? They redo everything for the Japanese bodies. So everything is redone.
They do. So, and it's the number two pharmaceutical market in the world. A lot of people, I mean, I know you know this, and the executives you work with know this intimately, but a lot of people outside of that don't realize that.
Yeah. What about China? Are you doing Mandarin?
We're doing Chinese. So our priority languages are the European languages,
The
12 European languages, Chinese, Japanese. But it's also adding some of the ones that are also key, like Russian, and even some languages where the volume might be small, but the science is good, like Estonian.
Interesting. Yeah. And so how long does it take to kind of set up and get your clients onboarded?
So with IPM, we've typically taken about 1 to 2 weeks to get people set up.
That's pretty cool.
With our ISLR, actually once, the biggest challenge is actually not getting people going because they can just upload a file and start from right away. It's really about just getting IT and security signed on board and then getting users set up. So mostly it's the security integration. For customers who are already using Sorcero Single Sign-On that are using our platform, and it can really accelerate security reviews because we're on Google Cloud. So if someone has a Google Cloud relationship, they've already vetted the platform for a lot of those needs. That could be very, very fast. With a little bit of training, people could actually start doing this in hours.
Wow, that's really cool.
And one of the really critical parts about it is the AI doesn't need to be tuned. Because there's a person involved, it starts to learn from the user and optimize it for them. So what we find is that first, we are able to run multi-database searches. So that you can run those. Sorcero's actually built the largest scientific content repository in the market today. We have over 259 million publications, an authorgraph of over 113 million authors. And it includes all these journals and databases, including, I think, 52 million full text articles at this point. So it's we basically inherited all of the work that Microsoft had done on Microsoft Academic, merged with all of these open scientific resources, and then linked and cross-indexed with the amazing work of folks at the National Library of Medicine, at Crossref, at all of these places where there's incredible amounts of data coming out. And that basically, you know, we get to work with some leading publishers as well. And that gives us an enormous data set to work with. But 30% of the work is just being able to run a unified multi-database search. We have 17 sources that we're able to pull from right now. And we deduplicate it all. It's a simple, silly step, but it can be up to 30% of the work. Then we label all of the data. So we use a mix of ontologies and AI to identify the population data, the intervention, the, you know, basically all of the outcomes data. And so basically we get all of the PICO data that is basically labeled on there. And that's huge because right now what happens is when people are doing sorry, the control as well. When we do all of that, typically reviewers have had to do that by hand. So they've had to read through it and then say, you know, okay, who, what populations were included? Is this over 65, under 65? And there's a lot of ambiguity in language.
Yeah.
And so ontologies really help with that. What do you mean by elderly? What do you mean by over, is it over 60? Is it over 65? Really labeling that exact data. Does it include, you know, pediatric populations? Does it include people with comorbidities? So labeling all that data immediately takes a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah.
We find that ontologies can label 70% of the data processing work that used to be done by hand.
Wow. That's very impressive.
Then once that labeled data is there and you have your protocol, it then optimizes the display. So it goes through your entire set of data. Let's say I've got 12,000 articles to review. That could take a very long time. As we said, for one person, that could be 3 years, right? Yeah. You know, for a three-person team.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the average SLR does take about 67 weeks across the entire TA. It's incredible.
That's amazing. Right? How long does yours take to do?
So we're doing 92% faster.
Yeah.
So we're literally running some of these that normally would take, six, like you're talking about ones that are taking 40 to 60 weeks. We're able to do it in 2 to 4. And then with some of the full methodologies, you want to do multiple layers, reviews, you know, maybe you're talking 4 to 6.
That's seriously impressive. And so how much work do they need to do, does the medical affairs team need to do once the system has actually run through and created the document that your system creates?
So they actually have to log into the interface. So they still have to do the work. And what it does is it takes all of that deduplicated, labeled, highlighted data.
Yep.
And then you actually have a very rapid interface with actually a keyboard. And it basically shows scoring and tagging on the likelihood of whether this has all of what you need for inclusion or exclusion.
Okay.
So with a few couple of clicks, you're able to very rapidly see, is it missing population data? Does it have outcome data? Does it have those things? And that means that with a few buttons, you can skip it, label it, put in the right buckets, and it tracks everything.
Yeah.
So that as it creates an audit trail, it auto-generates a Prisma diagram.
Yeah.
So you actually get that methodology. What it then does is the AI will also predictively order the abstracts or full text that you're looking at. And this is where it gets really interesting, because what we found is that as it learns what gets included, it puts it in order of most likely to least likely, most relevant. Yeah. So we found is that we had some users from the National Academy of Sciences. They found that they were able to find 95% of the relevant citations they needed for their review by just looking through 10% of the content.
Wow.
Because it front-loaded all of it there.
Yeah.
And so they were able to actually find, and they went through the whole process to validate it, but all of the stuff that was most relevant got front-loaded
right
for
up front. Yeah. That's amazing.
And so that allows them to very quickly review that data, extract that data, generate that evidence. And if you set your protocol where you want 95% coverage or 98% coverage, for some folks, that's enough. You know, you don't need to go through all of it. You can actually complete your process and do QA on some of the other ones to make sure that you're not missing anything and various things. There's a methodology for that.
Yeah.
For some folks that want to go through the whole thing, it's still 60% faster just going through each individual article. So when you get save 30% of the time on, you know, deduplication, 70% of the data treatment time, and then 60% of the review time, overall it adds up to that 88 to 92% reduction in time.
Yeah.
And then it auto-generates compliant outputs because you can set calendars. And it even has AI that will support things like really complicated stuff, like inter-rater reliability.
Wow.
It indexes performance, and it even can improve accuracy.
Yeah.
One of the things we've seen is that we did some benchmarking on our AI, and people are often thinking that AI has to have, you know, 99% accuracy before it's relevant. Well, it's very interesting. PLOS One did an analysis of clinical exclusion inclusion decisions on SLRs on every single decision in, I think it was 2017.
Yeah.
Over 300,000 decisions they reviewed. And turns out we actually were able to extract a human benchmark of performance. And these are trained scientists who are very good at their job, who are dealing with very difficult ambiguity and complexity. This is not a simple thing to do.
Yeah.
But the human performance baseline was 89.2%.
Yeah.
So we have, when we're using our tuned models and accuracy, have been able to achieve, and we've published results of 96.1.
Wow. So yeah, so much higher than the humans.
It is, but what we find is that it's even higher when they work together, because AI is better at certain types, humans are better at certain types.
Yeah.
And so instead of having a pure AI process, actually having a human plus AI process, it lifts the accuracy on both sides.
It's very interesting. It's very timely that you're doing this because, you know, we've got this big patent cliff coming up, and there's quite a few companies that are restructuring and laying off teams. And a lot of teams I'm seeing have got kind of been decimated, and a lot of people have been laid off. And so the people left are just really struggling because they've got much less people and they've got the same amount of work that's got to get through. So, you know, this is kind of a godsend for some of those medical affairs teams that have lost a lot of their staff.
I think that's absolutely true. I also think that I've noticed three real areas where the differences of speed are so profound, it actually can lead to a difference in kind. Mm-hmm. It actually can really impact your strategy. And I think this is really critical. What we've seen is that increasingly the new blockbuster is not a drug that just serves one condition and you have one message. Many of the most successful drugs are serving multiple therapeutic areas, multiple indications. So what we're seeing is that strategic use of these tools can accelerate the time at which you can find new indications, new uses of products. And that can give them both help patients have better outcomes. And for the people with the TPP and commercial hat on, it does increase market size.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that's really critical. What it means is drug discovery doesn't really end anymore at the moment of marketing authorization.
Yeah.
It's now an ongoing process where a lot of the challenge is actually continuously bolstering your data case, not inventing new drugs, but discovering new treatments with your existing portfolio.
Yeah.
And whether, you know, you have an old stalwart where a new combination therapy with a hot new drug can give it a new lease on life, to something where you find a whole new patient population that you can serve.
Yeah.
It's a really great alignment between the needs of patients and the needs of drug companies.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
The second thing we're seeing is that it allows for kind of emerging evidence. If you have an insights platform, so we, with our medical insights management platform, you know, we go through all that conversational data and interactions with field medical teams and advisory boards and congresses, all that data. And you often kind of get these signals or insights into a potential emerging new use. Mm-hmm. Something that's not enough to, you know, it might not be firm enough to run a new clinical trial on or do any of that, but it's an indicator of something emerging. And increasingly we're seeing in neurology, oncology, and in all the areas of complex disease, you know, a drug that comes out over here often has other uses over there.
Yeah.
And so running a rapid SLR, instead of waiting 67 weeks, if you can do it fast enough, this can validate your data case on whether there is enough evidence where you might be able to file for indication or a label expansion from RWE and RWD and literature, or is it something where you actually need to do a new clinical trial, a phase four, to add that in? And that used to be that SLRs were seen as too slow, too ungainly, too unwieldy to be part of the strategic toolkit there. And the third is actually in responding to regulations. If you're having to shore up a data case, you know, you're missing safety data and, you know, you're dealing with, you know, a requirement from FDA or EMA to deliver data 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Again, it used to be that these processes weren't relevant. They just couldn't deliver it fast enough. Now you can.
Yeah.
And so you can call up, you know, a services partner that can put a full team on it, use our platform, and generate data within that deadline.
Very nice. Yeah, because if you don't, you've got fines.
Yeah, or you could even get your drug pulled from market.
That's true, yeah.
And so a lot of times you see, you know, these almost, you know, not a panic response, but like, you know, a really crisis response from a company that needs to shore up a data case and to go through internal data, external data. And, you know, a lot of the CROs and other firms make a lot of their money throwing people at this problem very last minute.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Very, very interesting. And so I've actually got a few more use cases I'm curious about. So I'll talk to you offline about them because we may have another session in a few more months with another one. Well, really, really impressive. And congratulations on the new launch on this new additional product. It sounds amazing. And for anyone listening who's interested in finding out more and, you know, going to have a look at Sorcero and meet Richard and the team, you can go to Sorcero, Sorcero.com and find out more. Well, thank you so much for being on again, my repeat guest. And I look forward to hearing more where you're going.
Thank you, Andre. And if anyone would like to learn more, we're going to be doing an event with Reuters this week on the 28th. And we'd love to just hear from folks and see if we can help solve some of these key challenges for both patients and life sciences companies.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.